Everyone, this is Pam, and you're listening to an episode of the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com. And it's also freely available wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Today, I'm delighted to have as a guest a new friend that I met at a recent stuttering conference. And I'm just so excited that she's here and that she's going to share parts of her story. So, hey, Mandy, how are you today? I'm so happy to have you with us.
Hi, Pam. Excuse me, getting over that cold. Hi, Pam. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me here. Doing okay. Finding myself in the back to work, back to school transition, and life is full. Yeah, but good.
Good, good. Well, let's jump right in. Get us started by formally introducing yourself to us, if you would, who you are, where you're from, what keeps you busy?
Oh, yeah. So my name is Mandy Rodstrom, and I'm from Columbus, Ohio. And what keeps me busy is my beautiful family. I have three children, two in high school, one who is in fifth grade, and work full-time in the schools as a speech language pathologist.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty busy.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, what got you interested? What drew you into the field of speech language pathology?
Yeah, that's a great story. So I actually went off to Ohio University to be a music teacher. I had been in speech therapy from kindergarten to high school, always dreading my speech therapy sessions and not really liking it at all. I always loved my speech pathologists. They were always nice, but just the whole thing. The strategies never worked. Just really dreaded going and being, you know, pulled out of class, things like that. So it's pretty amazing how I ended up going into school for speech pathology. But do apologize. I got down to OU. I was in the School of Music undecided, and they had me taking like a hearing, speech, and language course for credit to fill an elective, I think. And so I remember one of the first classes I took of that class, HSLS 108, if I remember correctly. I'm sitting there and he showed a video of a little girl, probably first to third grade age, and she starts to stutter and these tears just started flowing from my eyes. And I had this aha moment that said, Mandy, you're meant to be a speech therapist. This is what you're meant to do. Wow. And from that day on, it changed my life. It changed my career path. And so I became a speech therapist. I went to OU for my undergrad and grad college experience there. And this is year 19 in the schools for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing, considering that that's not what your intent was at all. Just out of curiosity, why music? Why were you interested in that? Is that like a lifelong passion?
Yes, always was. I had played like five or six different instruments over the course from fifth grade to high school. I was in marching band, symphonic band. I was in orchestra, just major passion for music. I came from a home that was filled with music. My dad was a DJ.
Oh, wow.
I Yeah, I like to say music is my first language. Just grew up listening to all kinds of music, being very moved, being very touched by music, and always really relating to life through music. And I always wanted to be in musical theater, but you can probably guess what stopped me at the door there. So I found a way through. I was in choir in middle school, but there was a point where you had to choose between vocal music and instrumental. So then I took that path towards instrumental. So yeah, I just thought I want to be a music teacher. It was just something I had really enjoyed. I had wonderful music teachers across my elementary, middle, and high school, and but there was another path that was waiting for me.
19 years. Wow.
Yeah.
So was stuttering influential in your experience in college and grad school? Did it make it easier? Did it make it harder? What was it like?
A really good question, and I think I'm starting to kind of go back and revisit that, Pam, through my healing journey. And I really, at the time, I had a very distant relationship with my stutter, let's call it. I just discovered a year ago that there's a name for that, and it's called a covert profile. I very much at all costs avoided any stuttering. I did everything, anything and everything to not show that I stuttered. However, I would tell people I'm a person who stutters. I mean, I think that was part that part of it was beneficial, I think, for me when pursuing my schooling in speech pathology, was knowing right off the bat I know what it's like to sit on that other side of the table. I know what it's like to be that kid who's knock, knock, knock at the door, who's that person at the door that pulls you. You know, I know I had that lived experience, but it wasn't ever talked about through my schooling. It was more what was more focused on was being taught how to do stuttering therapy, and that pretty much was only a few fluency enhancing strategies and preferring fluency over stuttering. So kind of interesting how I look back. I don't think I was given a space to safely like embrace my stutter through college, and then it was kind of like reinforced through that how I was taught as a speech therapist was fluency only. So yeah, I'm still kind of going back, and I remember having professors tell me that maybe I could work on my speech ahead of time, or presentations, kind of encouraging that fluency route. Being more fluent, not to have so many interjections and and restarts, and maybe to try a little bit more with using my strategies. And yeah, kind of a yucky feeling, but that's just the way it was then. That's just what we knew back then. But again, it further solidified that hiding. I need to hide this, and I can't stutter. And yeah, just reinforce the fluency identity is optimal. So
Did anybody in college, did any of your professors like tell you or imply that you wouldn't be successful as a SLP because you stuttered?
I don't remember that. I don't recall that because I think they did see in me this person who's very empathetic, sensitive. So those good qualities of a therapist, I don't remember that per se, but I always got the vibe that they were picking up on, though, that low self-esteem, insecurity, that simmering chronically, constantly. So I think that's what they did encourage me is to maybe if you practice more, you'll be more confident in your speaking. But what they were ultimately too reinforcing was the fluency, and that's how I was going to seek that confidence, perhaps. So, I think that's more the vibe I got.
So have you had opportunity to work with kids who stutter in your school-based SLP career?
Yes, I have. And it's funny, just, in this period of reflection, they are the ones that I just sense of home when working with them. Just, I know early on in my career, kind of a repeat, I felt like, gosh, I'm doing the same thing. I know I'm doing this and I know it doesn't work. And why am I kind of perpetuating this? And then there came a time, maybe I think it was about the time the OASIS came out, which is the overall assessment of the speakers of experience, which really was the first time that we started looking beneath the iceberg, that really opened up the door for me, I think, to make that shift to, let's just stop focusing on fluency, because it's so I'm thankful to Scott Yaris and his co-authors, of, because I was like, okay, someone's looking at this, yay, okay, so we can write other kinds of goals here. It doesn't just have to be fluency, accuracy of fluency. So that was a changing point for me. And then I think I noticed digging, or I was able to create a space more so that focused on my students' lived experience. I didn't feel that struggle anymore. Whether it was personally knowing that I know fluency strategies weren't very helpful for me, but could be for them, but they were coming back and sharing that they weren't helpful either. So it kind of got that out of the way. And I really started learning how to be a counselor, I feel like, which was more so, I feel like, fulfilling than being a fixer. And so it was that shift, and I really love that. And that's how I've been practicing the past 10 years. I quit writing fluency goals and open it up to more of those quality of life and lived experience, and having a safe place for my students to talk about their feelings and their struggles or barriers, and more empowering self-advocacy type goals, education goals. So nice big shift in therapy. It's been great.
Now, how was that accepted by like your supervisor or your, SPED coordinator or whatever it's called at your school? Like, was that okay that you just stopped writing percentage syllable stuttered and stuff like that, as far as, for goals?
Right. That's a great question. It's funny. I feel like they don't really know. Ultimately, they're not specialized in what they, I mean, I have gone to them. We started talking about this a few years ago, and their point of view as well, as long as it's a SMART goal and, you can get that information during their evaluation too. It's just kind of like checking some boxes. So at least where I work, it was received well. Again, it took some educating and getting that information to them. They don't know. And there is all kinds of other goals that can be written to show that they're objective and they are measurable, and subjective and measurable. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, I think what I'm finding a harder time is getting my colleagues to start making that shift. My fellow SLPs is where I'm getting that, it's a change for them. And sometimes it's hard to change things that have been in place for a long time. But at the same time, I'm seeing a lot of, or I'm hearing a lot of my colleagues say, I always knew they didn't work and I just didn't know what else to do. So I was like, yes. So I'm really thankful. I am, at the same time, I have seen some of my SLPs really embrace it, and I'm really thankful to them and see them as an ally to our students and families.
How much training or education did you get on stuttering while you were in college studying to be an SLP?
It was like one quarter. Yeah.
One
And
quarter, like one quarter of a semester was spent on stuttering.
So we were on quarters back then. So like three months? Is that the same semester? I don't know. I think it was like three months worth.
That's more than a lot of programs have.
Well, good to hear that.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting. I've heard other courses since the early 2000s, like start doing things like desensitization exercises, and we never did that. I mean, I think we learned about it, maybe, but I just heavily remember the fluency, 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 and some of the lived experience being peppered in there. But yeah.
So what's going on with you at this point? You mentioned that, you know, you've done some reflecting and you've made some changes, it sounds like. I met you at the National Stuttering Association conference this past summer, and it was your first time. Tell me about that. Like, has that been part of what's been happening with you as far as like this shift I'm sensing?
Yeah, it's been wonderful. That was so special. That was definitely another step. And I kind of use this term, quote unquote, of coming out. And so it kind of all began last fall when during COVID, there were some moments, some really heavy moments for me. And when I was in meetings, in these Zoom meetings, and just feeling miserable and spending a lot of time ruminating after I had spoken, or all the stressing beforehand. So that before and after, just stress and like dread and doom and just like shame and all that stuff. And then last fall, I just had this voice say, "This is old. This is really tiring. You're 41 years old. Like, you're enough. Like, aren't you enough? Like, aren't you tired of carrying this?" Like, and I remember specifically seeking out trauma-informed stuttering therapy, as I had been trauma-informed educator in my district. I've been so blessed to have that experience and knowledge and training. And I had this on top of that, like, this is old. I just realized, oh my gosh, Mandy, you are carrying a lot of trauma from your hiding. Well, I didn't say hiding at the time because I didn't know it, but carrying this, like your relationship or this burden with your stuttering. There's something there, because I had been telling my students it's okay to stutter for a long time. But I was like, I'm not practicing what I'm preaching. There's something here. And it led me to an amazing trauma-informed speech therapist. And she was the first one in my life to ever say, "Mandy, do you know that it's okay to stutter?" And it was just, yeah, incredible, life-changing. I got
had,
to oh, go
had you
ahead.
known?
Never. Mm-mm. No, never. Never, not for Mandy. I knew it for my students, but not for me. And it was so exciting. It was scary. It was very scary, but just to, like, have a safe space to kind of discover what my stutter is. And it's like I'm well, a part of that was realizing that I had been living as Amanda to my professional setting and world, and Amanda was the covert identity. And then I discovered that Mandy was the person who stutters, the man, you know, who doesn't hold back. And then that kind of took me back to when I was a kid. I remember making that shift because I had struggled at a certain point, at a certain age. I was starting to get some negative feedback from people when I would introduce myself as Mandy. They would say, Andy? I was like, oh, you know, it's already, we know. Those people who stutter, those introductions are already very stress inducing. And and so I was like, okay. So I started experimenting saying, Amanda, oh, that comes out real easy. And so, but that was, I think I realized last fall, those were things that I realized that those are, that's the moment I went into that covert identity. And fast forward to last fall and the beginning of this year, she's like, that's not me. That's not me. I am meant to be Mandy. I am meant to stutter outwardly and be confident and be worthy and enough and valuable. And so, yeah, it's just been incredible. And going to NSA was amazing. My first time going to the conference, meeting, you know, many others like me, which was wonderful to know that there's so many other people like me out there with similar stories and struggles. And just it felt like for my body, because I relate so much to the trauma explanation, and but it just, I felt my body just so at ease and at home and not having to like be afraid. And it just, and then in that space with these beautiful open stutters and just really beautiful connecting, I think is more importantly, it was just true connection. And that's something I don't experience back home all the time. And just an overwhelming beautiful experience with that is just really connecting with people on a level I'm not used to back home. And it was, yeah, definitely one of those moments in your life that are just life-changing. And finally, just that experience of finally living like a new way to live, and what I've been waiting for, I think. So to finally arrive, it's been great.
This sounds like it's been like a truly powerful experience. You got a little choked up there. Like, it sounds like it's been, you know, like there's this saying that, you know, that of the NSA that, you know, it's a life-changing experience. It sounds to me like you've been experiencing a life-changing phenomena here, right?
Oh, most definitely, Pam. Most definitely. And it's like I have this feeling now that there's nothing that can stop me. I've been experiencing just calm, calmness in me that I haven't, confidence, you know, like curiosity, which is a hugely helpful tool through this, because my body is very much used to being in a hypervigilant state of fear and worry. And now I can just say, hey, no, I'm good. You don't have to worry anymore. And just putting myself in places where I never had before, but I always had wanted. So I'm doing things that I in the past would always avoid, but now I'm going for them. I'm almost feeling like a career change is on the horizon as well, that maybe the school setting is not where I'm meant to stay. And I'm finding myself really on fire for stuttering and working with people who stutter, being an advocate for the change that needs to happen in our field and how we work with people who stutter. And just, yeah, I guess on fire is how I see myself. This flame that is just like huge and wants to spread in a good way. Sorry, we think of fire, but bringing light to where there is darkness, and think of darkness as old and maybe tired ways. Let's bring the light to it and change it up. And there's work to be done. And I'm a change maker. I want to be that change maker.
Yeah. And you also had the opportunity to go to the Friends conference too, like shortly after the NSA conference. So like you were like super like immersed, right?
Yes, it was so incredible to go to have both experiences and see the value and gifts of both. And I think, for me with the NSA, it was like definite first timer. I was a first timer at both, but that first time at a conference, right? I just and then so I felt like I had that under my belt, and then I went to Friends a little more relax maybe, and it was just wonderful, open arm welcoming, and it was just really cool to be around a lot more younger kiddos and younger adults who stutter, but also share in the beautiful adults that were there too and their stories, and again their open arms and just instant connection. Again, that theme of instant connection, instant community. And to be able to share meals together was really beautiful. It was just wonderful. It just continues to solidify that there's a place at the table for me. There's a spot, and I want to be there. And I went to bed that last night of Friends before I had to, I think I just didn't want the time to end, and I went to bed at 1 a.m. I had to be up to get my flight at 4, and
Oh God.
I couldn't fall asleep. I was just so filled with such joy and connection like these that I had never felt in my entire life. Like I felt like I could feel my younger parts and self, my parts. I talk IFS language, internal family system, but younger versions of me that weren't seen back then, but that felt that when I was like engaging and connecting with the adults and that I had met there, and even the kids. It just the whole experience. I just felt so giddy. And gosh, how do I take that home? Or what's life going to be when I go back home? It's not going to be this way, but
So you mentioned that there's a shift that needs to happen in your field.
yes.
What is that? What are you referring to?
The need for fixing, the people that come that sit with us at the table, that come through our doors, if you will, the people that come needing our support and asking for our help. So needing, that medical model view of stuttering, which is to be fixed, and that is so not the case. And another layer of that would be this fluency, chasing fluency idea, that the only way to do that, to fix them, is through fluency. And again, personally, I strongly disagree, and but I know research, we've come a long way with our research, and I'm thankful. Just major shout out to those in the field that have done such amazing work in that, really shedding light on the lived experience and of people who stutter. And it's saying that there is work through acceptance and commitment, avoidance reduction, for stuttering. What are some other therapeutic tools instead of just fluency shaping, I guess, is where I feel it's at. And ultimately, our children, adults who stutter, and the families of the children who stutter, they are expert, not the clinician, right? And just that our job is more so to facilitate and hold space to help our clients, unearth their hopes and wishes and what they want, and know that it's already within them. I don't need to fix anything. As your therapist, there's nothing to fix, but I can hold this space for you to, you know, materialize what you want and need. And so yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that I like to see change, and get that information at our universities, getting it more taught across the board.
Yeah. You still have parents though of kids that stutter that come in to therapy wanting their child fixed, right?
Of course. Yeah.
So how do you break that down?
I mean, and you know, as a parent myself, I can totally relate. You don't want to see your child ever struggle. You want to protect them. You want to do anything and everything you can so that they are safe and happy and successful. And so it's just, I think it's this walking alongside with the parents. We do need to do that more, is, you know, honoring their thoughts and wishes. But perhaps maybe digging a little bit. Maybe it's not just through maybe helping them expand that, yes, they want their child to be successful and happy and in a career that they want someday, and seeing that, yeah, your kiddo can have that and stutter at the same time, and just helping them maybe see that, you know, yes, your hopes and dreams can also ultimately happen if they stutter or not. And so it's a very delicate space, and wanting to honor that, their voice and their expertise at the table as well, and educating, you know, shifting of beliefs maybe, or offering another view, perspective, I think is very important to have in those conversations with our parents.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, like it just, as you said, like, right, it's like hard to let go of my role as a parent is to, you know, take away from my child anything that's causing him or her pain. You know, that's
right.
My job. And, you know, like sometimes, you know, in my experience, having talked to hundreds and hundreds of people who stutter and parents, you know, like sometimes I get the sense that parents think that there's no other option. You know,
right.
I have to, you know, help my kid, you know, practice fluency shaping techniques, you know, because that's the only way that my kid will be successful, you know. So it just sounds like, you know, SLPs, like, that's a tough job to change that mindset. I mean, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. And it takes that therapeutic alliance, and it's about relationship, building that trust, making sure that they know they're being heard, and, you know, allowing that space to let them air their truth and their expertise. And then as the therapist on the other side, or I don't want to say alongside them, hold space for that, and, you know, help them, you know, delicately, gently walk them through the other side. And I think, you know, society, it's hard, societal expectations, or what is, how do I say this? Just, you know, preferred is fluency, but just again, taking a moment to educate that stuttering is just a different way of speaking. And, you know, that success actually could be, their child can maybe actually experience more success if they're not struggling, you know, not trying to avoid the stutter and trying to chase that fluency, and that they might be better off if they're just, you know, their whole selves and stuttering openly, and, you know, educating others, self-advocacy, building resilience. are perhaps the, those are maybe better ways that to ensure their child's success and happiness and quality of life, Yeah.
Well, when you put it like that, that would be hard for a parent to say no, 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 no to, you would think, right?
Right. I hope so, but yeah, it's funny as you said, because I can personally relate. My mom and dad, they thought that's what they needed. Well, back in the '80s, I mean, that's all there was fluency enhancing. But I'm an example of, okay, fluency enhancing, fluency shaping, fluency, fluency, fluency. And you can, I mean, like I said, 41 years old, just like miserable and totally unfulfilled. And when I had a speech therapist say, actually, it's okay to stutter, it just, yeah, changed my life. Yeah. So I'm really hopeful to do that to the younger generation, offer that. Yeah. Better life.
So in wind down mode, because we're running out of time, that always happens when we have these amazing conversations, but I'm really curious. Has Mandy said goodbye to Amanda? Uh-oh.
That was a good one, Pam. That went right to the heart. Yes, she is saying goodbye and thank you. Thank you for your love and protection. I don't need to be protected anymore. Thank you so much for your service. But please get in the back. Sit in the back, get in the back seat. Mandy's driving. I'm driving now, and you don't need to worry about me. I got this. No question about it. And I think there are still moments where Amanda wants to come up and put that mask on, if you will. But I'm pretty sure Mandy's. Really, so my dog's dreaming. I don't know if you can hear it back. Anyway, but Mandy is ready to drive. Is ready to drive now. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty powerful stuff.
Thank you, Pam.
Is there anything that you would advise young women that are, as we alluded to in the beginning, that are either approaching the space that you're in, or are in that space and are just not quite sure, what to do or where to go? What insight would you offer to a young woman in that space today?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. I would love for them to listen to that whisper that they hear and honor it, and maybe have that curious energy about it and listen, and maybe reach out to, I mean, I definitely advocate for whether it's a board certified stuttering specialist, or to seek out the Spiro Ally of Stuttering SLPs. Very much so, wonderful group of SLPs that are very knowledged and skilled and educated in this kind of therapy for stuttering. I would highly recommend that they perhaps go to the website and take a look around. I would also, invite them to check out NSA or Friends, to the many, whether it's an online meet or just peruse, maybe there's some videos, and also the podcasts. I think that helped me was connecting, whether it was through, gosh, there's so many podcasts out there, but just hearing, listening to stuttered voices was a first step for me, and like immersing myself in that. But I mean, ultimately, listening to that whisper inside of you that's saying, "This is I'm worthy. I'm great. I'm meant for more." Take up that space. Go get it. You add value to this world. Your story matters. Your voice matters. Yeah, I guess that's what I would say. Yeah.
Well, your story matters. And I am so, so, so grateful and thankful that you shared with us today from the heart. That was just heartfelt. And I appreciate you and thank you so much for spending time with us today. This was wonderful.
Thank you, Pam. I just want to say thank you for, you know, for having such a beautiful, safe space and giving women a chance to take up that space and share their story. And I'm just so honored and I really enjoyed being here. And thank you for being, this is the first time I, aside from the I said video, this is the first time I really openly shared this. So I'm really glad it was with you. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.